und herzlich willkommen bei Multilingual Stories. Mein Name ist Dr. Bettina Gruber und ich bin die Linguistin. Ich unterstütze voller Begeisterung mehrsprachige Familien mit Herz und Verstand auf ihrem individuellen Weg, damit ihre Kinder alle Familiensprachen erfolgreich und mit Leichtigkeit lernen können. In meinem Podcast bekommst du sehr persönliche Geschichten von Mehrsprachigkeit aus der ganzen Welt zu hören. Lehn dich zurück und lass dich inspirieren.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Multilingual Stories. Today's guest is Catherine Price Borchert. I was really scared of that name. Of the transition from English to Austrian German, actually. I'm super excited to have Catherine here today. We just spent about half an hour chatting before the podcast. So now we finally hit record. Hi, Catherine. So pleased to have you on board today. Do you want to introduce yourself to start
with? Sure. Thanks for having me. And it's really a pleasure to kind of meet you in person after being kind of friends online for so long. I am an expat of 20 years in Austria, and I'm a mom of three. I speak German, so I was a German language learner at one point, and I can talk about that a bit. I have a background in educational administration, so kind of the journey of other language learners here in Austria specifically is near and dear to my heart. And I'm from the South, so I'm also from a place where, kind of like Austria, the accent is different from other speakers of the language. So I'm used to kind of some of the difficulties that come with the territory of having an accent.
So let's talk about that. So you are married to an Austrian. You live in Austria. You live in Vienna, not that far away from me. And, you know, Austrian German has its peculiarities. So how was that for you learning German? What kind of German did you learn initially? And how did you cope with the Austrian color to it?
Well, it was Hochdeutsch. I learned Hochdeutsch at first.
German.
Exactly. Yeah. I went to a public elementary school in Atlanta, and there was a pilot program to add German to the fourth grade class.
So you learned it in the States already?
Across the whole district. And then I found out when I was in high school that I was the only one of like probably eight feeder schools. I was the only one who continued it to the 12th grade. So to Matura, to high school leaving certificate. And then I studied German in college, and I went to
in the States, so you studied.
I went to a women's university. I went to a women's college. Mm-hmm. A college is university in the States. And so my learning environment was all female, which I loved. Work hard, play hard. And I liked Austrian German because kind of as we talked about earlier, I still make mistakes. And I think Austrian German is very forgiving because of the accent. People kind of slide into their articles. They don't, it's not all crisp and clear like in Hochdeutsch and German. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate that there's probably room for a little more humor, I think, in kind of the quips and it tracks with kind of Southern English. There's a lot of idioms and
Get that. I totally get that. So the thing is that, you know, Germans usually find Austrians super charming. So one of the feedback that I often get on my videos that I do, you know, it's like, oh, I just love listening to you. I love your accent. I'm like, okay, that's really cute and nice of you. But did you hear anything of what I actually said?
And you're like a full grown woman, right? So you're like, okay, well, I can be charming too. I'll add that to my list.
Yeah, that too. So you came to Austria for your studies initially.
Yeah. And I was in Graz. Okay. And then I went home and I finished my bachelor's. And then I came back with the Fulbright program. And I was an English teaching assistant in high schools here in first in Graz and then in Vienna. And I met my husband. So I entered the workforce. We got married. Everything was here. Our life is very much in Austria. So, you know, as much as I and I've heard a lot of parents on your podcast talk about like that feeling they want to go home once they have children. Austria is home. There's so many benefits to raising a family here. On the one hand, and then also vis-a-vis raising kids in the US. And so I have strong feelings about that. And I'm really grateful to be raising a family here.
I think that's super interesting to hear from somebody who actually comes from the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point during my career as a linguist, there was the question, okay, so how am I going to continue professionally? As an academic, you're expected to be globally mobile. And my husband, he actually studied in the States for 20 years. You know, he did his undergrad and his PhD in the States. And we, you know, of course, the United States has amazing linguistics programs. But for us, it was clear we do not want to raise a family in the States. So this entire job market was off the table for me. I was starting my career. You know, he already had his career at that point. It was off the table because we did not want to raise children under these circumstances, basically. And it's interesting to hear that from an American.
Well, and I even have an acquaintance who was in the US for work. She and her husband built a business there, both coasts. And she moved her family back to Austria because she wanted her kids to become teens here and have a similar experience that she had. I mean, yes, I saved my cheerleading uniform. You know, the kids know what homecoming is, and you know, they get this kind of feeling for me. But I would be a chauffeur if I were in the States. My husband and I would just basically be, you know, to school, to activities, to, you know, whatever it is that our lives would revolve around a car. You know, safety in schools is an issue. I'm from Georgia. I mean, it's not always been kind of the political situation that it is currently in the US, but I know that my children can enjoy a more independent life here in Austria. And my oldest is in Scouts, which I come from a scouting family as well. It's even how my grandparents met. But I, you know, she walks down the street in our district and people are waving and saying hi. And I'm like, this is a built-in, I don't want to say like security system, because I want her to know she's her own independent person, but like it's a community, and I appreciate that, and we've built that and we've worked hard on it. So I wouldn't trade that.
That's amazing. Sounds amazing. So you already touched upon a topic that is, of course, very dear to my heart, and I want to know more about that. So how do you manage to integrate American culture and your cheerleading uniform into your everyday life?
So we are, I would say we're more of like English centric family. You're asking, I know probably language and culture, but my oldest essentially chose English as the language that she was going to speak with her siblings. And I have a child who visits a speech therapist, and I spent a lot of time kind of like, unpacking how we are. And I speak English with my husband. I speak German. But we are a very English centered family. You know, movies are in English, television is in English. We have bilingual friends, but how we incorporate it in every day, I mean, we have a lot of contact with family, you know, thank goodness for things like, you know, the video, FaceTime, the sort of thing. We made a choice to go home for fall break this year. And like, we went hard. We did Disney, Halloween in the States, but my kids had never had that. So it's choosing how we as a family, you know, both financially and, goals wise, what we want to expose the kids to. And, you know, we have the best of both worlds. So that's, we choose to kind of make these touch points, whether it's language, culture, experience for the kids.
So what's the common language in your family? Does your husband speak German with the kids, or does he speak English as well?
We've always done one person, one language. Mm-hmm. He speaks German with the kids. And, as I think a lot of bilingual families noticed COVID threw a wrench in our plans. And our youngest was home with us for quite a long time. She has been kind of our, I mean, every kid is different. You also have three children. You know that I think we even talked about being very smug with our older kids, you know, with their abilities. But she speaks English sometimes to her dad. And so about a year and a half ago, we made a decision, you know, because it was mid-COVID, that she was going to start school later. She has a September birthday. We were going to start her in school a year later to give her a chance to have more German. Mm-hmm. And so we pulled her out of her bilingual kindergarten, where she's so charming. She was making everybody speak English with her. And so she basically had no touch point in her day except with her dad that was German. And so we said, okay, we want the kids to visit German-only schools. They get enough English at home. They really do. So I'm not worried about that. And I know the level of English taught in European schools is excellent. So I'm not concerned about that. She's in German kindergarten daycare, and she'll go to a German speaking school next year. And that was what, you know, there's so many feelings about that. And there's, I think for moms, there's a lot of like shame, whether it comes to, you know, am I doing the right thing? Something that kind of in our friendship group, I have a couple of expat friends. It's been, what are our kids' accents? Because we get commented on at home when we're among English speaking family members, or here, you know, oh, your child used an English word in place of a German word. There's a lot of external input that you get. And the older I get, I'm 13 years into my bilingual parenting journey, I'm able to kind of deflect a bit more. But of course, being an expat, you have tender spots for these types of issues. Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah, makes perfect sense. But I love hearing from someone something like, I'm not worried about English at all. You know, that's amazing. That, I mean, of course, you know, in all fairness, you have a huge advantage with English because, as you said, the support you get for English at school, you know, that's unparalleled for any other language, maybe French in Vienna, because we have a French school in Vienna and, you know, some others, a Czech school, but, you know, but the level that you get for English, that's unparalleled basically.
And I also don't have that shame that a lot of moms maybe have speaking their language abroad. You know, in Vienna, it's understood. Or even I might get a look if I'm, you know, I remember stopping with my daughter at a crosswalk, and here people are very specific. You know, you stop, you wait, you become like a, what is forbid? You're a example for others. But I, you know, I'll say, we're stopping at the stoplight. And the person next to me who's a, you know, native German speaker will get it and, you know, smile. And there's an acceptance of it.
Yes, that's true.
Even in the countryside when with our kids, you know, there's people, because people understand the language. And I can understand the frustration if you don't, or having people, you know, people even categorize languages as like good or bad, or, you know, and I know a lot of Austrians our age, their moms or dads were told to speak German to their kids. And so they don't speak their language.
Many struggle with stigma. That's for sure. So you have a huge advantage, but still, you know, I also know other families where the languages are English and German, and still, you know, they don't carry it as, so I love the word selbstverständlich in German, you know, that is just the way it is. That's how we roll. That's how we do it, you know. And this is the ultimate goal for me, for any family that I work with, to reach this. This is what we do, you know, and it doesn't matter what anybody else says or thinks.
Well, but it might help that it went the way I wanted it to go, because I think, do you know what I mean? Like, yes, it went my way. But, you know, I remember hearing in our friendship groups, or like, I've been a part of the Vienna Family Network for 13 years now, since I was pregnant and with my oldest. And a lot of times there was a lot of feelings about, you know, your child speaking back to you and in the environment language. And my oldest did not do that. And so I was very pleased with myself. And my second child did not do that either, but his language learning journey was different. And so, you know, it's been very humbling to say, okay, And he visits a speech therapist. We've even engaged her for my youngest in preparation for school, just to make sure. And I think that's probably also why a lot of people or parents seek out your assistance. They want to make sure they're doing it right.
Yes.
There's so much riding on the feelings and pressures external. We're both Montessori parents, so we have a kind of a different Einstellung, perspective towards education. But there's a lot of pressure when it comes to like just getting it right.
Yeah, for sure. I have an entirely different question. No, I do have an entirely different question, but later first. So how was the language journey for your children different? So how was it different for the second one than for the first one?
Did you know that I also offer one-on-one consultations and packages in English? If you are currently facing challenges in your multilingual family life, or if you simply don't know how to best include all your languages, just send me an email and tell me about your struggles. I promise you, you can overcome whatever hurdles you are facing. Just drop me a line and I will personally get back to you. I look forward to hearing from you.
It's a good question. So he has dyslexia, mm-hmm. and it's been different for him because we noticed that speech wasn't his speech was a bit difficult. You know, his vocabulary. We did baby signing as well, so I knew passively he understood so much. But then we knew we needed to engage quite early. He started when he was three. With speech therapy. And I was listening to some of your back catalog of podcasts, and your message to start early is so important. You know, if you have an inkling, better to be told, go home than to not get the help. And so we started that journey with him, and it's been so eye-opening, and it's been so helpful for him. We're now in this phase where he's made so much progress, understandable, he's a very intelligent child. But something that I learned recently from our speech therapist is that he's going through puberty and his face might change, and he could lose, because of the characteristics of puberty, he could lose some of the sounds that he's been able to create just simply because of the changes that are going to be happening with his body. And I thought, but transit life is all about transition. So we'll get there when we get there. But my oldest didn't struggle with those issues. And so to be a family where we have this neurodivergence, on the one hand, and it's there were so many opinions about it. I got opinions from family members. Why don't you get your oldest to speak German to him? I could not do that if I tried. I couldn't do that if I tried. Or like, doesn't dad speak German to him? And I'm like, of course dad speaks German to him. Yeah. Lots of well-meaning advice. So to kind of sift through that and find our own truth and the path we were going to go. And also kind of accepting that there's going to be challenges ahead of us with the language journey with most of them. So yeah.
That's so valuable. I love the fact that you brought this up as part of being neurodiverse. Yeah. So I told you before we started that I have this amazing podcast episode with a friend of mine, a fellow linguist, who specialized in dyslexia. And the interesting thing for me about dyslexia, like the very first thing to understand, is we only call it dyslexia in a culture where written language, where the written word matters. Mm-hmm. But this, the fact that these people struggle with reading, that only manifests or can only manifest in a culture where reading is important. But really, it's a neurodiverse brain that just the brain looks different. So the dyslexia, you can see that in other areas of behavior as well. And that's super important because these people are usually super creative. Those are usually the people who can think outside the box because of the way their brain is wired.
I really underline what you're saying is completely true for us. He's you know, his flavor of dyslexia, because that's something else. There's a lot of, and then we had kind of the COVID bonus on top of that of like, you know, language learning was difficult. And then there was a school switch, but his flavor is that he struggles with certain sounds and hearing certain sounds within words in German. He reads voraciously, but the way he thinks, he sees pattern. He sees differences in patterns that I would never see. Like we go on a hike and he's finding a pen knife or like a, you know, Swiss Army knife, or he's seeing, you know, money someone left on the ground, or I didn't know that our TV remote had a microphone. And so instead of having to spell the name of the show that he wants to watch, he pushes the microphone button and he says what he wants it to look up. And I'm like, you know, will he have to produce the same type of language, but will he have to produce the same type of results that maybe kind of kids today with dyslexia have to, you know, study hard on, or will it be different in the future? And I think it will be, because I think, you know, most of us we're preparing our children for jobs that we don't even know what they'll be yet.
Exactly.
So, I can't wait to listen to that episode. I wish we could hop off and listen to it now. Yeah.
But you know, but it's another funny thing, like, or funny or tragic thing, actually, you know, we call it dyslexia and we treat it as something that's a problem. And we do not see all the good that, you know, every coin has two sides, right? And calling it dyslexia and focusing on the language part, that's not the way that we expect it to, or that society expects it to, completely neglects the amazing cognitive abilities that these people have that I don't have, right? Yeah.
Well, and I think something else that when we sought help for it and had him assessed, something that was like the biggest, what is Trost? Like, it was the biggest
consolation.
Yeah, consolation to me is that the assessor told us, look, he has what again would be called deficiencies in this certain area, but he had such great resources from being bilingual and from being a child within a large family, you know, and for being very, very intelligent, that have helped him to adapt. Mm-hmm. To kind of make up for these areas that were weaker. And I thought, you know, that's the gift we're giving our kids, is that, you know, whether we think so or not, is that they have resources. We are giving them resources just by being the parents that we are, by them having the richness of two languages or more. And that helps them, you know, overcome whether they have a neurodivergence or not.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm glad you found the help that you needed and the help that actually helped your child and did not make things worse, because, you know, that's also, you need to find the right people. And I always tell people, you know, find somebody who knows about bilingualism, because it's not a given. And just because somebody knows about language or somebody is a pediatrician does not mean that they're necessarily experts on multilingualism. So now I want to ask the question that I wanted to ask before.
Yeah.
How come we're recording this podcast in English and not in German?
So I was like, oh, do I scratch my head? Do I tell that I'm feeling nervous? No, I mean, I would say that I have like a C1 level spoken German, but written, it's more of like a B2. Yeah, which, you know, today, in today's world where there's Google Translate, that's an excellent problem to have, right? I'm not embarrassed to speak German, but I've had the privilege to work in English in Vienna. Every role I've had, I've been able to speak English. And I feel like, especially if I'm going to be kind of sharing my story and being authentic to myself, I wanted to be able to speak English. You know, I was listening to so many podcasts yesterday. I was like, does she laugh more when she speaks German? I wanted you to have like a good connection. I wanted you to enjoy this. But we have so much in common. I don't think that's an issue, but you understand what I mean, that sometimes, you know, you can be more vulnerable in your language of your heart. But it's not always been easy for me to learn German. I mean, my college professor, who was Austrian,
really
made me cry when I said I wanted to spend the year abroad. And she was like, why would you do that? You are not that good in German. But again, it's
what an awful thing to say. And it also shows how little she knows about language acquisition and language learning. Excuse me.
That's something else. She was in her direct way. And again, that's something that I've had to get a thicker skin here. She was just trying to save me, I think, heartache or whatever. But it was kind of the opposite, because I ended up meeting my husband and immersing myself in life here, and it all worked out fine. But I think that, having, we talked earlier, being over 40 and kind of just being comfortable with life, I was like, you know what? This is who I am. This is how I speak. This is how I live my life. I have Austrian friends who love to have to speak English with me, because it's not they're practicing English by any means, but like their kids can, gain something from it, or like they, there's ways to express things in English that you can't in German, and vice versa. But I'm kind of comfortable with who I am. And I visited a career coach a couple of years ago, and she said, she's most comfortable in English, but she was like, and I tell companies who want to book me, I'll do it in German. I might do it in bad German. There'll be things missing, but her confidence has inspired me since then to be like, okay, I'm going to show up as who I am. So
part of your answer sounded a little bit like you wanted to apologize or explain away why you didn't do it in German, but you said something so valuable, and I love that. So there are so many parents who consider speaking a language with their child who is not the language that they're most authentic in, that they're most comfortable in. And, it really depends on where that language is coming from. So if it's a heritage language, I always encourage people to still pass it on, because, it's more than a means of communication. It's part of their roots. So please pass it on, but work on your language skills. But if it's a language that they only learned at school or studied later in life, and they're like, yeah, but I'm super fluent. Yes, maybe you are super fluent, but it's not the language that you will be most authentic in. It's not the language that you want to show up in for your child, because, form that connection and that bond. And that is different when you do it in your first language.
Yeah.
And I love that you just brought that up now, because what we are talking about, it is very personal. It is your story. And for you, your story has been written in English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's how you want to share it. And, that's amazing. So there is no need to apologize for anything. There's no need to explain anything.
I ended on like saying, like, I'm confident in doing this choice. But yeah, I think that that's the case. And that's what I know that a lot of the people I've encountered working with parents and, in the Vienna Family Network that I've been in, there is, you're apologizing for something. It's feeling ashamed of something. And what is that? It's that that what you have to offer, or it's easier, or, there's so many excuses, situational, emotional. And I don't mean excuse in a bad sense. I mean, there's things that you kind of deals you make with yourself in your head about how it should be, or like, my partner doesn't speak the language. And I do realize that I've had the privilege of having English as the language that I can pass to my family, and it's understood here. But I feel strongly, I have friends that are Icelandic, and the husband is a German speaker, but grew up in Chile. So he's also got Spanish to pass to the kids. There are four or five languages, but I think being vulnerable and passing that on to your kids. I remember when we came back in the summer, my youngest wanted to call my parents, and she did my dad wasn't there, so she had to leave a video message, and she said the word y'all. And that's a Southern.
Oh my God. That's so
sweet. It
was
the first time I'd ever heard her say it.
That brought tears to your eyes. Oh my God.
I did something right. She's been exposed to this, and I've said it enough. And it was just like a, heart opening moment. And
yes,
Yeah.
That's a little bit like when I hear, I I started out speaking standard German with my children when they were born, even though I grew up in Upper Austria with a heavy accent and dialect. But then I moved to Vienna at the age of 18. I very quickly picked up the Viennese standard German. And then for some reason, I started speaking standard German with my kids. And it was, you know, and then I made a conscious effort to, you know, sometimes at least speak the dialect with them because I wanted them to at least understand it as well. And now since we've moved back to Austria, you know, that was already like 7 years ago. And the dialect has been coming through more and more and more in my German because, you know, I speak more often with my family. I see my family more often. And sometimes, especially when we go visit my mom, my children will start practicing or will demand me speaking dialect with them. And then they will start practicing it. And those moments when I hear like just yesterday, my youngest said, nah, instead of nein, instead of, you know, no, but he used a dialect form for no. And I was like, oh my God, now he's starting too. I love those moments. So I can totally relate to the yowl.
Cute. Well, and you know, my parents did the same thing. They moved from deep south and they moved to the big city in Atlanta, and I have a different accent than they do. You know,
you don't speak very southern.
I would say it's more universal, but I appreciate that. And I think it's appreciating, you know, there's a lot of things about the South, but appreciating that heritage of the language that I can give to my kids. Mm. Yeah. I love that word. There's a lot of like feeling surrounding the word heritage. And yeah. I think
I like it too. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have asked you? Anything that you would still like to share that we didn't get to talk about?
No, I mean, I related so much listening to the other parents on your podcasts that I, you know, kind of back catalog was listening to. And I think that the message that I think that you offer this wonderful service, I think that, you know, if you have concerns, reach out to someone, reach out to an expert. You know, that's how we connected with social media, where I have my perspective and my background in educational administration, but I'm not the expert. And so I had someone reach out to me. I think I told you, I recommend you probably 3 times a month to folks who reach out and are like, how do you do it in your family? I'm like, well, this is how we do it. But if you've got concerns, this is who you should talk to. Because it is a journey. It will change. You will have, you know, you're going to have school influences, friend influences, you know, here in Austria, my daughter listening to Connie, you know, Herbücher, you know, these like podcasts, and she's all of a sudden sounding like a German. You know, you have, I know, not the worst thing, sorry, Germans out there, but you know, there's going to be a lot of influences. And I think that would be the message, is like, it's okay. The feelings that you're feeling as a parent going through this language journey are normal, and they can be tricky, but like, get help if you think you need it. I think that's the best thing. For us, it was involving a speech therapist who kind of can answer my questions on a week-to-week basis. And for parents who might be in a country where they don't have help, how wonderful is it to have online help? I mean, thank God it's 2022, right? Because
yes, absolutely.
You know, the parents who immigrated of years past, they didn't have that. So that's maybe what I would want to add.
Thank you so much. So thank you for recommending me 3 times a month. I really appreciate it. Thank you for, you know, I'm so happy we finally got to meet after, you know, a really long time on and off conversing on Instagram. Thank you for your time and thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah. And hopefully again, sometime in person, right? We're not so far away.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Christina.